This is Ham College, episode 138, for April 10th, 2026. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM. Whether the bands are calm, crowded, or somewhere in between, when the gear stays out of your way and the contacts keep coming, you know you're in good company. Choose ICOM. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
And I'm Dean Martin.
And we've got studies tonight for the amateur radio technician exam pool.
I'm going to say we got questions.
We do have questions. I was waiting for you to say that.
Okay. So my part's the part we got answers.
Do we need to start over? We do have answers.
Some of them may be wrong, some of them may not.
So what did we talk about last time?
Let me see if I can remember. Let me put my thinking glasses on. Operating activities, I think, comes to mind. Stuff like radio direction finding, contests, linking over the internet, exchanging grid locators. Then we did another group of questions that time last...
We did.
Actually, last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Non-voice digital communications was the topic. Things like image signals and definitions of NTSC, CW, packet radio, PSK, APRS, error detection and correction, amateur radio networking, digital mobile radio, WSJT modes, and broadband hamnet.
Sounds like we were really busy last week.
It does. We kind of were. It was actually fun.
Yeah, we're going to cover a few things tonight.
Actually, more fun?
We're going to talk about antennas, vertical and horizontal polarization.
Oh, that's fun.
Concept of antenna gain, definition and types of beam antennas, antenna loading, common portable and mobile antennas, relationships between resonant length, frequency, and also dipole patterns. And if that were not enough, feed lines. We're going to talk about attenuation versus frequency, the types of feed lines, selecting feed lines, SWR concepts, antenna tuners or couplers, RF connectors, selecting weather protection of your feed lines, and all that stuff. It doesn't say that, all that stuff on here, but it's, I feel like.
It's kind of understood and implied.
Yeah. Yep. So I think I asked you the first question last time around. So you got one for me?
I do have one. Got you an easy one here.
Good.
What is a beam antenna? A, an antenna built from aluminum I-beams.
B, an omnidirectional antenna invented by Clarence Beam.
C, an antenna that concentrates signals in one direction.
Or D, an antenna that reverses a phase of received signals. What is a beam antenna? An antenna built from aluminum I-beams. No, it doesn't have to be built from aluminum or I-beams. B, an omnidirectional antenna invented by Clarence Beam. They're not omnidirectional. D, an antenna that reverses the phase of received signal. Nah, it's C, an antenna that concentrates signals in one direction. That's my answer. Chat room?
They're talking about it being invented by Jim Beam.
Oh.
Could have been.
Yeah, they're saying C. And it is.
All right, you nailed that one.
Which of the following describes a type of antenna loading? A, electrically lengthening by inserting inductors in radiating elements.
B, inserting a resistor in the radiating portion of the antenna to make it resonant.
C, installing a spring in the base of a mobile antenna to make it more flexible.
Or D, strengthening the radiating elements of a beam to better resist wind damage. Antenna loading. So I'm assuming they're talking about a loading coil. So I don't think it's going to be anything to do with D or C or B. It's going to be, I think it's going to be A, electrically lengthening by inserting inductors and radiating elements. So inductors are coils, so yeah. That's what I'm going with. Going with A, alpha.
That's what they're saying in the chat room. That one makes sense to me, too. Here. So you just bought an antenna that's loaded, right?
I did. It's got a big old coil on the end of it to shorten the length of it. It's an 80-meter off-center fed, but it fits in the space of a 40-meter.
So is that inductor right at the end, or is it a little ways before the end?
It's pretty close to the end. I don't know. I haven't even taken it out of the pack yet. I hope to maybe do it this weekend if I get a chance. But I think it's pretty close to the end.
Okay.
Which of the following describes a simple dipole oriented parallel to Earth's surface? A, a ground wave antenna.
B, a horizontally polarized antenna.
C, a traveling wave antenna.
Or D, a vertically polarized antenna. Which of the following describes a simple dipole oriented parallel to the Earth's surface? So, this way. A ground wave antenna? No. A horizontally polarized antenna. Now, the antenna's horizontal, so that could be it. A traveling wave antenna? No, it's not a traveling wave antenna. And it's not vertical, so I'm gonna say it's B, a horizontally polarized antenna. Chat room saying B?
About that.
And it is.
Here, go give that up for you. You earned it.
What is a disadvantage of the short, flexible antenna supplied with most handheld radio transceivers compared to a full-size quarter-wave antenna? A, it has low efficiency.
B, it transmits only circularly polarized signals.
C, it is mechanically fragile.
Or D, all these choices are correct. Well, it's not D, because it's not mechanically fragile, so it's not C either, because it's short and flexible, right? That's what it right. said. And it transmits only circular polarized signals. I'm going with A, is low efficiency. I mean, everybody pretty much knows us use any kind of walkie-talkie with a rubber antenna. Not the best. It's handy.
And it's not fragile.
No, it's not fragile at all. So I'm going with A. It has low efficiency.
Yeah. You're right. Everybody in the chat room agrees. Low efficiency. You know, everything's a trade-off.
Yeah.
It's nice having a short antenna and, you know, real springy and all, but
yeah, it keeps you from breaking it.
Yeah.
I've broken a lot of those old walkie-talkie telescopic ones. Chrome. I don't know what they're made out of. Chrome, aluminum, something. Not aluminum, tin. Whatever they're made out of, but they've been pretty easy to break.
They crimp in them. That might be brass.
Maybe.
Chrome-plated brass.
It may be.
I think it is, because it breaks real good.
Yeah, it does. Space Patrol. Which of the following increases the resonant frequency of a dipole antenna? A, lengthening it.
B, inserting coils in series with radiating wires.
C, shortening it.
Or D, adding capacitive loading to the ends of the radiating wires. Which of the following increases the resonant frequency of a dipole antenna? As frequency gets higher, the antenna is getting shorter. Lower frequencies, longer antennas.
Yep.
So if you want to increase it, the frequency, you got to shorten the length of the dipole. I'm going to say it's C. Chat room saying C.
Heck, I agree with that. I concur.
All right. Just got to take a moment to think about them, because that one really wasn't tricky, but it'd be easy to think of it backwards.
Uh-huh.
Just think of this, you know, an AM broadcast station, the tower is the antenna. So that whole tower, and probably the shorter ones are closer to 200 feet, that whole thing is the antenna. For FM, and that's a quarter wave antenna, would be about 200 feet on the higher end of the dial there. So that's 200 feet. Now, think of your typical car radio antenna. When we had antennas that were, you know, mounted up on the fender up there. Those things are
about one.
Okay, I do too. Those things are about a quarter wavelength. That's a heck of a lot shorter. It's a lot higher frequency and a heck of a lot shorter antenna. So,
yeah.
Which of the following types of antenna offer the greatest gain? A, a 5/8 wave vertical.
B, isotropic.
C, J-pole.
Or D, a Yagi. Which of the following types of antenna offers the greatest gain? 5/8 vertical. Well, 5/8 is better than a quarter wave or a half wave. Isotropic, J-pole, those are omnidirectionals. But D's a Yagi, so that's going to concentrate the signal. So that's going to give you more gain in the direction that it's pointed. So I'm going with D, the Yagi.
Sounds like a good answer to me, and chat room says the same thing. But Francis said, but no antenna has gain, only focus. Which,
what would that be,
yeah.
Perceived gain?
Focus, no. What he's saying is no antenna actually multiplies the power coming out.
Yeah,
it just focuses it.
Yeah, like high gain, omnidirectional, the radiating pattern's kind of close to the ground.
Yep, because if you're not trying to talk to the Artemis, there's no reason to send the signal straight up. Bend it down where it's usable. Or point it in the direction you want to go.
But not to confuse the question, so the answer for this one is Yagi. So that's what their
name
is.
Yeah.
What is a disadvantage of using a VHF transceiver with a flexible antenna inside a vehicle? A, signal strength is reduced due to the shielding effect of the vehicle.
B, you'll put your eye out, kid. No. B, the bandwidth of the antenna will decrease, increasing SWR.
C, the SWR might decrease, decreasing the signal strength.
Or D, all of these choices are correct. Just right off the bat, I don't think it's D because that's some pretty...
Some of it's kind of
weird,
far out there.
Yeah. What is the disadvantage of using a handheld VHF antenna with a flexible antenna inside a vehicle? A, signal strength is reduced due to the shielding effect of the vehicle. That's a possibility there. B, the bandwidth of the antenna will be decreased, increasing SWR. That's, I don't think, maybe it is, but that's not the answer. C, the SWR might decrease, decreasing the signal strength. Well, that's crazy talk there. The lower the SWR, the better. So decreasing it would be a good thing. It's a signal strength is reduced due to the shielding effect of the vehicle.
Yeah, because I've run portable mobile plenty of times. You used to get fussed at plenty of times.
Yeah, that's happened, hasn't it?
It has.
I seem to remember that. What is the approximate length in inches of a quarter wave vertical antenna for 146 megahertz? A, 112.
B, 50.
C, 19.
D, 12. I'm going to go with C, 19.
Okay.
Why?
Well.
Because I've made them before.
And that's how long you made them?
Roughly 19.
Yeah, they're saying C over in the chat room.
But there's a way to figure that out.
You know, there is a way to figure that out. If you just had a formula.
What is the secret formula?
Well, first, it is C. You are correct. Well, look at there. There's two formulas. You got a calculator handy? So the first formula, and that funny-looking squiggly thing there, that's the symbol for wavelength, and we're going to calculate it in meters. That is 300 divided by the frequency in megahertz.
And it was, what was 300?
As 146. 2.054. 2 meters.
Go figure.
That does seem to ring a bell, doesn't it?
It does.
All right, let's look at the other formula, if I can get back to it.
Nope, can't get there from here.
Here. So now we need to convert those meters into the length in inches. And that was a full wavelength, that 2 meters you came up with.
Yeah.
So we need to divide that wavelength by four.
Make a quarter wave.
Yeah, so 2 meters divided by four is 0.513.
Well, what's the other part of the formula? Times 39.37.
39.37.
20 inches.
So.
That's close to 19.
Close enough.
As close as we can get.
Yep. Close to 19. So that's not the only way you can figure that out. There's more than one formula that you could use to do that with. We just decided to do it in meters because that's where everything is leaning these days, rather than calculating out in inches and feet. Although, when I'm thinking about antennas, that's the measurements I'm thinking in, but meters is a little easier. And you don't have to do the whole 39.37. You could just do it times 39. That's close enough.
It'll get you in the ballpark.
Yep.
Unless you're building the antenna, then you want to be more accurate.
True.
What is the approximate length in inches of a half-wavelength 6-meter dipole antenna? A, 6.
B, 50.
C, 112.
R, D, 236. The approximate length in inches of a half-wave 6-meter dipole antenna. You know, I might need to borrow your calculator for that.
All right, I still got it here.
But first, let me just take a stab at it so I can get it wrong. 6-meter dipole antenna. I'm just going to take a wag at it, and I will be wrong. All right, I know.
You need a buzzer.
On 10 meters, a quarter wavelength is 109 inches because that's what the old CB whip antennas were.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So 6 meters is going to be almost half of that. So close to 50 inches would... That'd be a quarter wave, so double that to get to a half wave. I'm going to say it's C, 112.
Okay.
But let's just see if I'm anywhere close. We could have a buzzer.
I guess I'll give you this.
Okay.
That was good.
Well, that was my logic.
Do you want to prove it out or you just want to roll with
it?
Yeah,
let's prove it out.
Okay.
Do we have a formula?
We do have a formula.
Okay, it's a little bit different, pretty close. So we want a half wavelength.
Yeah.
So the wavelength was 6 meters. So we just need half of that. So half of that would be what? 3 meters?
Yep, I'm just going through the motions. 3.
Okay. All right. So the other side is what we're going to do. The half wavelength times 39.37. Okay.
Three was half.
Yeah.
Times 39.37?
Yep.
118.11. Again.
Close enough. In which direction does a half-wave dipole antenna radiate the strongest signal? A, equally in all directions.
B, off the ends of the antenna.
C, in the direction of the feed line.
Or D, broadside to the antenna. In which direction does a half-wave dipole antenna radiate the strongest signal? Well, I don't think it's equally in all directions because it's not circular to the tops. Tops of direction too, right? Up. Yeah. Off the ends of the antenna, no. Direction of the feed line, that don't really have anything to do with it. I think it's going to be D, broadside to the antenna. So, vertical, so I'm going to radiate all out this way.
What if it's horizontal?
Say, like so.
In a circle?
Well, in those directions, except when it hits the ground.
You're looking at me like
I'm waiting for you to say something.
He didn't buy that. Let's see if you're right first.
Okay.
Broadside, that's what they say in the chat room. The way I was thinking about it is, okay, you got a horizontal antenna sitting here. All right, there's your antenna. So the signal is not blowing off the ends of it.
Nope.
It's going this way or this way.
Or that way.
Or that way.
Or down.
Or down and then bounces up.
What is antenna gain? A, the additional power that's added to the transmitter power.
B, the additional power that is required in the antenna when transmitting on a higher frequency.
C, the increase in signal strength in a specified direction compared to a reference antenna.
Or D, the increase in impedance on receive or transmit compared to the reference antenna. What is antenna gain? Well, it's got nothing to do with impedance, so we can knock out D. It's not additional power that has to be added to the transmitted power. It's not B, additional power is required when transmitting on a higher frequency. It's C, the increase in signal strength in a specified direction compared to a reference antenna. What they're saying in the chat room. So,
here's a question for you, Professor. Okay. If I've got a high gain 2-meter antenna, like a dual bander, like my 17 footer, my Diamond GP9,
okay.
Comet GP9.
All right.
I know it's transmitting. It's increased. The transmit's stronger because the mm-hmm. Pattern's narrow. Does that help with your receive as well? The gain?
It does. It doesn't care. It's the gain's going to be the same regardless of whether the signal's going or coming.
So it is going to help the receive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You thought it was, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, I knew you did.
Seemed like a good question to ask.
It was a good question to ask. So, yeah, gain, all we're talking about, if you've got a reference antenna and you've got another antenna, is the difference between those two. How much stronger is the second antenna compared to the reference antenna?
On receive and transmit.
On receive and transmit, yes. What is an advantage of a 5/8 wavelength whip antenna for VHF and UHF mobile service? A, it has more gain than a quarter wave antenna.
B, it radiates at a very high angle.
C, it eliminates distortion caused by reflected signals.
Or D, it has 10 times the power gain of a quarter wavelength whip. I don't know about the 10 times thing, so I don't think that's right. Eliminates distortion, no. Radiates at a very high angle. I don't think so because it's higher gain than a quarter wave, so it's going to have a lower angle of radiation, I think. So I'm going with it has more gain than a quarter wave antenna, which I actually said that earlier, not even knowing this was a question. We had something. Yeah. That
so is this like deja vu?
It is deja vu. I'm going with A. It has more gain than a quarter wave antenna. I know that's true, a fact.
Yeah. That's what they're saying in the chat room. And it is. So that quarter wave antenna would actually radiate at a very high angle.
Yeah. They've used us to listen to the, well, back when the Mir space station was up there, built one just specifically to listen to that.
Or the satellites and make good antennas for that. Not as good as, you know, a beam that you could.
But it works.
But it works, yeah. Your Diamond or your Comet 18-foot antenna would not be a very good space antenna.
It stinks for that.
Yeah, they do.
Unless it's on the ground.
Yeah. If it's directly above you, you can't hear. If it's about to go over the horizon or come up.
Maybe.
Well, believe it or not, that is half of tonight's questions.
But which half?
The first half. By the way, a 5/8 wave mobile antenna is a good antenna. These dual band mobile antennas that most people have these days that I see, and it's what I've got on both my vehicles, and it's what you've got too. It's a half wavelength antenna, half wavelength tall. It's got a coil in the middle, and it'll work on 2 meters and 70 centimeters, but it's not as good as that 5/8. I've directly compared that back in the day when I first got licensed. And when I went from a 5/8 wave 2 meter antenna to the half wave dual band antenna, I could tell, talking to the repeater, my signal would not go as far as it did previously.
Can you even get a 5/8 wave dual band? I'm not sure you can.
No,
I don't think so. Not without some kind of electrical trickery going on.
We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away. We got exactly this many more questions to go.
Stick around any ham radio conversation, and ICOM is bound to come up. The reason is straightforward: solid receivers, clear audio, and a layout that feels natural the second you start operating. These radios are made for real on-the-air time, whether the bands are calm, crowded, or somewhere in between. When the gear stays out of your way and the contacts keep coming, you know you're in good company. Choose ICOM. If you're heading to Dayton Hamvention May 15th through 17th, make sure you stop by ICOM's booth. We'll have a few sneak peeks at upcoming products, so come say hello and see what's on the horizon. Hope to see you there. Remote ready, contest capable, and built for serious signal, step into the future of amateur radio with ICOM's powerhouse trio. The IC7760 HF 50 MHz digital transceiver, the ICPW2 1KW HF 50 MHz linear amplifier, and the all-new RC7760 remote controller. Designed to work in perfect harmony, this system offers full remote operation, high output performance, and seamless integration across the bands. The RC7760 remote control serves as an extra control head, and up to 5 can be registered to the RF deck, though only 1 can be active at a time. For wireless connectivity, simply connect a commercially available Wi-Fi access point via the LAN port. Whether you're working from the shack, the field, or a remote site, you'll experience crystal clear audio, digital precision, and amplifier-grade power, all from a single unified interface. It's the ideal setup for contesters, MCOM operators, and high-demand users who expect more from their gear. Together, they redefine what's possible in amateur radio, setting a new standard for global connectivity and reliability. The IC7300 MK2 builds upon everything operators loved about the original IC7300, elevating it to a sharper, cleaner, and more capable HF experience. Its improved RMDR, lower phase noise, enhanced cooling, and expanded I/O options make it the next-level performer for serious operators who want crystal-clear reception, rock-solid transmit quality, and modern conveniences that fit today's operating styles. Also, check out Sirius Performance for Sirius operators with the IC9700 VHF UHF 1.2 GHz all-mode transceiver. For more information about ICOM's great amateur radios, contact icomamerica.com/amateur today.
Well, back into the questions. That's why everybody's here. I think it is your turn to read it, pretty sure.
Okay. I'll read it, pretty sure. What is the benefit of low SWR? A, reduce television interference.
B, reduce signal loss.
C, less antenna wear.
Or D, all of these choices are correct. Benefit of low SWR. Well, it's not less antenna wear. So all of these choices can't be correct. Reduce television interference. That's not what they're looking for. Reduced signal loss. Low SWR, you're going to have less signal loss. Yeah, I'll say that it is B. Chat room saying B.
Must be B then.
What is the most common impedance of coaxial cable used in amateur radio? A, 8 ohms.
B, 50 ohms.
C, 600 ohms.
Or D, 12 ohms. Most common impedance of coaxial cable. I'm going with B, 50 ohms, right for the kill there. I don't even know how to reason out those other ones. I just know it's 50 ohms.
Yep. They're saying B in the chat room. I'll agree with you. I'm thinking it's strange how they came up with those other answers, because 8 ohms, that's typical impedance of a loudspeaker. 600 ohms is a typical impedance of balanced audio. It's typically 600. That's what, you know, the input on the mixer we're using over here is. The output of the microphones, probably somewhere close to that, maybe slightly less. 12 ohms, I have no idea when they came up with that.
Why is coaxial cable the most common feed line for amateur radio systems? A, it's easy to use and requires few special installation considerations.
B, it has less loss than any other type of feed line.
C, it can handle more power than any other type of feed line.
Or D, it's less expensive than any other type of feed line. Why is coaxial cable the most common feed line for amateur radio systems? I'll start at the bottom. D, it's less expensive than any other type. No, that's not true. C, it can handle more power than any other type of feed line. It's not true either. B, it has less loss than any other type of feed line. That's not true. Ladder line has lower loss than coax. Yeah. A, it's easier to use and requires fewer special installation considerations. And that's why we use it.
It is pretty easy.
Yep. A.
You don't have to worry too much about how high it is off the ground and stuff like that.
Yep. Everybody's saying A. We don't have to worry about standing it off from your metal antenna pole.
Mm-hmm.
Just tape it to it. What is the major function of an antenna tuner or an antenna coupler? A, it matches the antenna system impedance to the transceiver's output impedance.
B, it helps the receiver automatically tune in weak stations.
C, it allows an antenna to be used on both transmit and receive.
Or D, it automatically selects proper antenna for the frequency band being used. What is a major function of an antenna tuner or antenna coupler? Automatically selects proper antenna? No, not really. Allows antenna to be used on both transmit and receive. I don't think that's what they're looking for. Helps receiver automatically tune in weak stations. can actually help some, but I don't think that's it either. The real reason is it matches the antenna system impedance to the transceiver's output impedance, A.
I think you are correct.
Although B and C could possibly be construed as it, but it's not the answer.
Well, let's see what the answer is before we discuss that. Yeah, you're correct. It helps a receiver automatically tune in weak stations.
You know, when you tune it in, you can hear some things better.
Yeah, if you're way out in left field and you get close to resonant.
But that's not the answer, so
that's
don't
not
get confused
the answer,
by
it. See, allows antenna to be used on both transmit and receive. And, yeah, I could see where you could say, because you can receive with anything.
Uh-huh.
It don't have to be tuned. It's not going to work as good.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, but I see
be,
what
it
you...
It could be that, too, yeah. Some of that. But the real answer is going to be A.
Yeah.
That's the main purpose of it.
Yeah.
The other are little ancillary benefits, I think.
Yeah.
The other two.
I'll agree.
What happens as the frequency of a signal in coaxial cable is increased? A, the characteristic impedance decreases.
B, the loss decreases.
C, the characteristic impedance increases.
Or D, the loss increases. What happens as the frequency of signal in coaxial cable is increased? Well, as the frequency increases, you're going to have more loss in that cable. So I'm going to say D, the loss increases. That's what the chat room was saying. Doesn't really change the impedance, and it certainly doesn't decrease the loss. If you are using a small cable like a RG58, for a short run, that'll be okay on 2 meters. Not quite as good on UHF, though. It worked fine down in the HF band. I say fine. It would work okay in the HF band. Not much loss there, but if you went up in frequency, yeah, loss increases. Which of the following RF connector types is most suitable for frequencies above 400 megahertz? A, UHF PL259/SO239.
B, type N.
C, RS213.
Or D, DB25. Well, I can tell you it's not a DB25 because I've used quite a few of those in the past, and I've never figured out how to hook them up to my antenna. RS213, I don't even know what that is. Is that the ones for RG213?
I don't know if that's even a cable.
I don't either. PL259s or UHF connectors are not really that great above 400 megahertz, but type N connectors are really good for it. So I'm going with B, type N.
So what they're saying in the chat room, I agree with you. A trivia question here. So if a UHF PL259/SO239 connector, you would think, well, 400 megahertz, that's a UHF frequency. Uh-huh. You would think that would be the connector, but why is it called a UHF connector if it's not good for UHF?
I have no idea. I've often wondered that. I never bothered to look it up, though. But it doesn't make much sense, does it?
Well, no, it doesn't, but it did at the time. That PL259, if I'm correct, that is a military number. They came up with the specifications for those connectors. And at the time they did that, UHF was not like 300 megahertz and above. It was a lower frequency than that. So that connector was okay for it. Because UHF was a different, wasn't the exact same frequency range we think of today.
Which of the following is true of PL259 type coax connectors? A. They're preferred for microwave operation.
B. They are watertight.
C. They're commonly used at HF and VHF frequencies.
Or D. They are a bayonet type connector. Which following is true of PL259 type coax connectors? A. They are not preferred for microwave operation. It wouldn't work at all there. B. They are not watertight by any means. C. They are commonly used at HF and VHF frequencies. Yes, they are. And D. No, they are not a bayonet type connector. In other words, you don't just push it and twist it and it's on. You screw it on. C. They're saying C in the chat room.
I would concur with that.
Which of the following is a source of loss in coaxial feed line? A. Water intrusion into coax connectors.
B. High SWR.
C. Multiple connectors in the line.
Or D. All these choices are correct. I don't know. D seems like it might be kind of plausible here, but let's look over this. Which of the following is a source of loss coaxial feed line? Water intrusion into the coax connectors? That could be it, I think. High SWR definitely could. And I know multiple connectors in the line can. There's a loss at those connectors. So I'm going to go with D this time. All these choices are correct.
I'll agree.
I think the water's going to cause it, too.
Oh, yeah. Yep. D. So, C, multiple connectors in the line. Those are call loss. So should you not use connectors?
It's best not to splice them and to splice your line together with them if you can help it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have to. We do it at field day, but it only costs the only way we get the coax in. But if you're running a permanent installation and you're using especially higher frequencies like UHF frequencies, you definitely don't want that for those.
Yep.
What can cause erratic changes in SWR? A. Local thunderstorm.
B. Loose connection in the antenna or feed line.
C. Overmodulation.
Or D. Overload from a strong local station. What can cause erratic changes in SWR? It's not D, overload from a strong local station, because SWR is something you're generating when you're transmitting, regardless of whoever else is around you.
And they wouldn't have a single repeater at a radio station tower if that was the case.
No. C, overmodulation. Nah, overmodulation won't cause SWR. If you got SWR that's high or erratic, you're going to have it whether you're overmodulating or not. A, local thunderstorms. I mean, that'll cause problems, but not changes in your SWR. So it's B, loose connections in the antenna or feed line. I mean, that makes the most sense even, too.
Mm-hmm.
Chat room saying B.
I've had that problem before.
Yep. That's when you just got to get out there and shake it and figure out where it happened.
Yep.
What is the electrical difference between RG58 and RG213 coaxial cable? A. There is no significant difference between the two types.
B. RG58 cable has two shields.
C. RG213 cable has less loss at a given frequency.
Or D, RG58 cable can handle higher power levels. RG213 is a good bit bigger than 58, so I'm saying it's not going to be D. Because it's bigger, I'm thinking it's C, but let's go through the rest of them. RG58 cable has two shields. There's no difference. I'm going with C. RG213 cable has less loss at a given frequency. And I'm sure that's the case. I've got some RG213 I'm running at home.
Yeah, that's, if you know what RG58 is and what 213 is, you know that's got to be the right answer. C. Yep.
Which of the following types of feed line has lowest loss at VHF and UHF? A, 50 ohm flexible coax.
B, multi-conductor unbalanced cable.
C, air insulated hard line.
Or D, 75 ohm flexible coax. Which of the following types of feed line has the lowest loss at VHF and UHF? A, 50 ohm flexible coax. We'll have to look at the others to compare them. B, multi-conductor unbalanced cable. I'm not even sure what they're talking about. When I think of multi-conductor, I'm thinking like a microphone cable or a cable that's got multiple pairs in there rather than just one. But no, that's not going to have the lowest loss.
Don't typically run that for your feed line either.
No. D, 75 ohm flexible cable. Probably wouldn't be much different than a 50 ohm flexible cable. C, air insulated hard line. There's your answer.
That's the good stuff.
Because air dielectric in that type of coax cable, lowest loss. C. Chat room saying C. Something that we get wrong in ham radio. I say we get wrong. I mean, it's what we call it. If we've got a piece of heliax, you know, that's like cable with, instead of wire, you know, it's solid copper.
Yeah, I'm running some of that at home.
Yep. In ham radio, we call that hard line. Mm-hmm. But in broadcasting, that's not hard line. That's heliax.
It's still flexible?
Just because of the way it's made.
Hard line's rigid, right? Like copper
rigid,
pipe?
Yeah. A hard line in broadcasting is a piece of copper pipe with another piece of copper pipe inside of it. That's what we call hard line in broadcasting. So, but in most heliacs, you know, there's foam dielectric in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just squirt it full of foam, and that holds the center, you know, correctly in the center of it. But some of it just has little plastic standoffs, usually plastic or Teflon or something, that holds it in the center. That's air dielectric line. Then, you know, there's not as much dielectric material in there, so there's less loss.
Mine's got foam in it.
Mine does, too, that I have here. It's pretty unusual for a ham to have air-insulated hardline or air dielectric. What is standing wave ratio, SWR? A, a measure of how well a load is matched to the transmission line.
B, the ratio of amplifier power output to input. That was a tongue twister.
B, the transmitter efficiency ratio.
Or D, an indication of the quality of your station's ground connection. What is standing wave ratio or SWR? Frank Howell always told me SWR means squirrel to wire ratio at my place.
Could be at your place.
Okay. Indication of quality of your station's ground connection. That's not your SWR. Transmitter efficiency ratio, that's not it either. The ratio of amplifier power output to input, or how well load is matched to the transmission line. I'm going to go with A, measure of how well a load's matched to the transmission line. So the load's going to be your antenna. And the transmission line is the transmission line.
Yep.
Kind of goes without saying, right?
Pretty much.
I'm glad I did anyway. Just clear it up.
Oh, I'm glad you did too. A, that's your answer?
That would be my answer, A.
That's what everybody's answering in the chat room. So I didn't notice any incorrect answers tonight.
Are we done?
Yes. That was the last question.
Wow, that went by so fast.
That did. When you're talking about antennas and transmission line, you know, it's hard to get enough.
I enjoyed it. It was fun. I always enjoy doing these.
It was good stuff. Antennas and transmission lines tonight. Like peas and carrots, huh?
Yep. Just like Mama said.
Yeah. So, next episode of Ham College is going to be May the 8th.
If you say so. Oh, yeah, I guess it probably needs to be.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be in Dayton the next week.
Hamvention, only 35 days.
10 hours, 34 minutes, and 50 seconds right now.
Okay.
Cool.
So that's something, if you can make it, you want to be there. Xenia, Ohio, just near Dayton. And biggest ham fest here for sure. Now, there are other big ham fests in the U.S., but...
not that big.
This is the big daddy here.
I think that's probably the biggest one in the world.
I think it probably is, too. But folks over in Europe are going to say it's Friedrichshafen.
Well, it's not. But the Tokyo one might be bigger. I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's a big three for sure. Those three, I would say. You got to go to Hamvention at least once. If there's any way you can do it, yeah.
If you go once, so you're going to want to go again.
You probably are. But it's only one time is required. It's not actually required, but...
got to make the pilgrimage.
Yeah. You need to see it at least once.
All right. Have I already wound this one up?
I think I am. This is just a coincidence that we both wore these shirts tonight. And it's almost like a spooky kind of coincidence, maybe caused by that show itself. It's happened twice.
Recently. Well, fairly recently.
I went through my closet tonight and saw mine. I think I'll wear that. You know, that's a school shirt there.
Yeah.
From Stranger Things. Last time I wore it, Tommy just happened to, because we don't color coordinate generally.
No, typically no.
We got these shirts from Mike. He sent these to us.
We did. So, most of my wardrobe came from Mike.
A good portion of it.
VE3MIC.
Yep. So thanks again, Mike.
Yeah, appreciate that.
We're wearing school colors here.
What if you didn't get a shirt from Mike?
Well, Mike doesn't send everybody shirts now. No. I know he wants to, but he has not done it yet.
It would probably be cost prohibitive to do that.
It could be. So you might have to buy your own shirt.
Where can you get a cool shirt?
Well, if you needed a cool shirt now, just, you know, to clarify.
Yeah.
You can get those at shop.spreadshirt.com/amateurlogic. You can also get ball caps, coffee mugs for Amateur Logic and Ham College, both at one friendly location on the internet there.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of other stuff on there, too. They got hoodies. We got little backpacks, all kinds of stuff on there.
So if you want to look sharp at Hamvention or whatever Hamfest you're going to this season and help promote Amateur Logic and Ham College at the same time, here's a way you can do that. And staying with the class theme here, if you wanted to hang out with all the classy kids, where would you do
high
that?
High class.
High class.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're kind of social. You could meet us on the social, Ham College Society. Facebook.com/groups/Ham College.
Or you could follow us at Ham College on X or Twitter.
And we also have groups.io/g/amateurlogic. If you're not into the regular social media stuff, groups.io is a good alternative. It's kind of basically a mailing list, and not a lot of extra traffic on there. We post when we're going to have shows or contests or something like that, but that's mostly what comes out of there.
Pretty much.
Good option for you if you're not into the social thing.
So that's how you can be socially aware of important stuff like we talk about here.
Yeah. So if you get your Amateur Logic shirt or Ham College shirt and see us at Dayton, be sure to stop by and get a picture with us. We're going to show the ones that we get on the show. We usually do.
Definitely. Definitely.
Appreciate that.
Yep.
Wearing the colors of representing.
And if you want to know when we talked about a particular subject here on Amateur Logic
or
College.
Hey, I know the answer to that.
Yeah, you do?
I do know.
Okay.
Because I'm the one that puts them on there. AmateurLogic.tv/wiki. You can go on there and search the show notes from, I guess it goes all the way back to one, although some of the older ones aren't quite as complete as some of the newer ones. But if you want to find out which episode we did something on, that's where we do it. If you ask us, that's where I'd go look.
It even goes back before one.
The minus.
The pilot.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's on there. It should be.
Cool.
So, yeah. That's that. So, we've got one more group of questions on the technician exam here, and then it's time for you to go take your test.
And what day will that happen again?
The test, I don't know.
No, the questions.
The last Ham College related to the technician exam is going to be Friday, May 8th.
May the 8th.
So with that, any...
that'll give you time to go take your test, too, before it's...
Yeah, it will.
A lot of places.
You could take your test at Hamvention. Any final thoughts before we get out of here? Maybe we should tell them when the next Amateur Logic is going to be?
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's going to be May the 22nd.
Nope. It's going to be in April.
I'm getting ahead by a month.
It might be April the 17th.
I think it will
be. Next Friday.
April the 17th. Next Friday. I'm the official slacker for that episode. So, email, I think, no, or was it Mike? I don't know. Both those two slack real hard. So I've got, they set a high or low standard, depending on how you want to look at it.
I think I'm getting ripped off because I'm slacking in May and I'm going to Dayton. I'm going to have a lot of video to edit when I come back.
Well, that's happened to me. You know, most times, months that I am the slacker, I end up having some video. So that's just the way the cookie crumbles. Any final thoughts before we get out of here tonight?
If you got your Amateur Logic swag, wear it to Hamvention and be sure and look us up and get your picture taken. Yeah. And if you don't have it, still got time to go get something and wear it to the show. Get your picture taken with us. You'll be on Amateur Logic. We'll make you famous.
And if you don't have it and you don't get it, just wear something.
Please.
Yeah. And I'll just say we will see you. Well, we'll see you for Amateur Logic next Friday night.
1 week from now. 7:30, everybody. Good night.
Yep. 7:30.